Hello, everyone. This is Michael Fair, and I thought I would do another one of these glorious Blind Cool Tech podcasts for you. And I hope everyone's enjoyed my guide and my lectures and other prior podcasts that I've done. And it's time now to take another angle at a new development that has come my way. Over the past while, some of you know more about this than others, my life has gone through some changes, and I am in the process of looking at becoming a little more mobile. Mobility has never been a strong point with me, and I've always mainly gone places with other people, because I can travel safely. I can, in terms of physical safety, I'm quite good with my cane. I'm not in any fear of smashing or doing damage to myself. However, outside especially, I can get lost very easily. And that's always been a barrier for me, because I just don't like putting myself where I'm forced to rely on other people's help if it comes to that. It just seems so wasteful to me that I don't generally do it. Because to the point, as things were, I just couldn't get any better at it, no matter how hard I tried, and it just never seemed to rectify itself. And despite a lot of effort of some pretty intelligent mobility instructors I've had over the years. Now, however, thanks to the generosity of one man, who I'm not sure wants to be named yet, so I won't, he has provided me a Trekker Breeze. And I'm eagerly awaiting more opportunities to just see how far it can undo this this tendency of getting lost for me. I know it's not a complete solution. You still have to have good mobility skills and know the landmarks in the area to a certain extent. But since I've managed to mark my home at least with it, at least I know I can get back if I wander off. So having said that, my whole aim over the past little while is to get myself more travel ready. I'm also getting married in this coming September to my fiancée Janine, who's fully sighted. We travel around a lot, and I want to be able to do as much as I can around our local area independently, in terms of maybe going down picking up the odd thing that we might need at a store, something along those lines. At least a small store. I don't know about a grocery store, but we'll see. To gear up for this, and also for traveling, like, we'll go on trips together to see friends. We have a lot of friends that are fairly far away, so we generally go for like a weekend stays to cut down on the driving. She doesn't mind driving, but there's a lot of it, so it's good to minimize it. So for those times, I find in general, as a blind person, it's really good to have portable computing with you. I've discovered over the years that there are just occasions when you're dealing in the sighted world that they will do things that either are of no interest to you or are just easier for them to do themselves, etc., etc. So there will be times when you are left to your own devices, such as they are. And I've found that it's just easier going all around if I have a good portable computer with me. And usually that has been a full-size laptop with attendant case, battery. I've got a portable table, speakers, and I put this all in one case because it all fit. The laptop case was big enough such that the rest of the stuff would fit in its case along with it. And it just all made sense from a one case carries all angle. The downside is it's heavy, and when you're trying to actually navigate yourself, it tends to pull you off course somewhat because it dangles over one shoulder or across your body. To carry it a little safer, like I usually do, it tends to pull you a little off course. So for me, it makes a lot more sense to have everything off in the back. And because I've got the netbook now, which I'll go into, I'll be reviewing all this separately, but basically I have a new netbook, an Asus 900HA, one of these triple EPCs, and it's very impressive. One of those, plus some external speakers. I got a pair of Logitech USB V20 external speakers. They're USB powered, and much better than the Altec Lansing XT1s I reviewed a lot earlier in an issue of Odyssey magazine. These speakers are briefly, they're shorter, they're broader, they're less likely to fall over, they're a little heavier, but that's a good thing because it gives it more balance. There are stands that fold out the back that contain the wires, and there's only two cables that you need. There's one that goes from the left to the right speaker joining them. There's another that attaches to your USB port, and that's essentially how that goes. So you can basically leave these things stored so that you just really you can keep them attached, and the only thing you have to plug in is the USB cord. And they come in their own little traveling case. So those are the Logitech V20 speakers in a nutshell. That's one item off. Now that we've gone through that sidetrack, I've got the netbook. I've got some luggage to go over with you that I picked up to carry everything easier. And, of course, my portable table, which I'm keeping from my previous setup, of course. Now, we'll start with the netbook, since it's the most involved. We'll get that done. It's an Asus EEEPC 900HA. Marketing department could use a lesson in nomenclature. I don't know, I have visions of Super Friends or Buck Rogers. I'll just pull out my handy-dandy trusty 900, ha, you know, and take care of whatever problem is afflicting the world. You know, one of these things that you just think someone was, you know, really either nerd-like to the extreme or something, I don't know, or just not thinking straight. Having said that, the unit is really good. The H is for hard drive, the A is for Atom, as in the Intel Atom processor that powers it. And so it does make technical sense, if not especially sounding enticing as such. It's a small little thing, about the size of a paperback book, 2.3 pounds in weight, roughly, maybe as much as 2.5, with the battery included. The battery plugs into the back of it. It's the only thing on the back. There are no other ports or anything except for the power port that is on the back that you plug the power brick into. The battery can just snap into place very easily and is held quite securely in place by a locking mechanism. You don't need sight assistance to change the battery. You should be able to do that with no problem at all. It's very tactile, very easy, intuitive. It can only go in one way, so that the ridge in the back of the battery is upward, and it sort of goes upward at the back. So when the unit is fully closed, the back of it is thicker because of the battery, and it just smoothly integrates with the back of the unit. So on the outside, continuing from there, since we're already starting that, there are three USB ports, two on the right, one on the left. There also a card reader on the right-hand side near the front, a SVGA port for plugging in an external monitor, which we're not going to need, near the back of the right side. On the left side, there's the headphone and microphone jacks near the front, the USB port in the basically middle of the front, or middle of the left side, that is. There's nothing on the front of the unit, just to clarify that, or the back, other than the battery. Other things on the left side are the Ethernet jack. Is more towards the back of the unit, and a vent in the middle of it, one of the air vents. I assume it's the outtake vent, is that's the generally direction I feel airflow at all. If you feel airflow from the unit, that's where it is. It opens up basically like a book. Imagine a book facing towards you, with the spine facing directly away from you, right, and you just lift up the front of it. That's essentially what you do to open the netbook up. And now, the keyboard is where we should go next, I guess. But before that, just to clarify, you will need sighted help setting up your netbook or upgrading the memory. I wouldn't recommend upgrading the memory or the hard drive without sighted assistance. You have to undo about four screws and then carefully reach in and feel the where the memory slot is. It's kind of a different kind of slot that you have to sort of push the covering away, and then you can exchange the memory. We found it fairly easy to upgrade. The diagram in the manual didn't help much, but I upgraded the memory from 1 gig to 2, and that's essentially the only change I've made to the unit. So basically onward to from that note, you'll need about 15 minutes to 20 minutes of a sighted person's help to get you up and running and fully to the point where you can plug in a USB flash drive with your free screen reader like NVDA works well. You can probably get or get SA2Go working, if assuming you're connected to the internet at that point. But NVDA worked quite well, the portable version of it that I have on my jump drive. And after that 20 minutes, I was basically able to just set it up on my own, start installing stuff and configuring it. I'm a JAWS 9 user, so I got JAWS 9 up and running in very quick order. AVG 8 installed easily with no real hiccups once I got JAWS in there. The only hitch is, of course, there's no optical drive. There's no for putting in DVDs or CDs, so to get the authorization, you had to sort of use my main computer, cut and paste the authorization code, get it into a text file, which I could then transfer to the other computer, and then have it there to punch in when required. Not too hard at all. So that is essentially how that worked, once I was connected to the internet, at least. I don't know that would work as well if I wasn't connected to the internet, but once you are online, it is very easy to get JAWS up and running on one of these netbooks. Now, the keyboard. I keep coming back and veering away from it. Now it is time to face it head on. The keyboard is different. There ain't no getting around it. It is a different experience. Just similar enough to be comforting at first. I guess it's one of those things that's similar enough that you have the increased sense of the change, because all the letters and numbers and punctuation are right where they should be in relation to each other. It's a condensed keyboard. It's not your full-sized, stretched-out desktop keyboard, but it is a really good, comfortable design. It's not nearly the leap into painfulness that I was kind of expecting. I got to feel one of the Acer Aspire 1s at Future Shop, and that really allayed my fears about going with an 8.9-inch versus a 10.2-inch netbook. I still probably would have felt more comfortable with a 10.2-inch netbook, but the prices of those really didn't come down into what I felt was my responsible range where I could afford to spend on this. So I settled on the 8.9-inch 900HA. One of the deciding factors of this, other than the keyboard, which I heard was comfortable to use from a couple of other blind owners of this device, was that I knew that the Asus power management controls were all in the system tray and very easy to use from a blindness perspective, which they are. That really panned out nicely. So I'm glad from that standpoint that I have the control, because that's a lot of what these netbooks are about, is power saving options and functionality, and I'll go over that after this keyboard. The keyboard itself is modified in a few ways. The most egregious and irksome change that I have noticed is the shift key. The left shift key is normal. It's right where it ought to be and is of decent size. The right shift key is not. It is scrunched in there between the right and upper arrows in that little corner. There is a key where normally none would be, and that is your right shift key. It is slightly larger, I believe, than the letter keys, but only slightly. And is so always when you're shifting, remember the second key up on the far right, and don't hit the arrow keys, right? It takes, that is what's taken me the most pains to adjust to, but after 5 days of use, I'm there. I don't generally, it does slow me, you know, somewhat, a little. Your speed will take a tiny hit, but as you get more accustomed to it, it becomes more second nature, and you'll just fly along and won't even notice the slight delay of getting at that right shift key. Now, the other thing is the six-pack of keys is gone. It is just completely vanished. What you have instead, for the home, end, page, up, page, down key, you hold down the FN key, which is to the right of the left control key, right before the Windows key. And you hold that in, and your arrows become home, end, page, up, page, down, left, right, up, down, respectively. Your FN key also gives you access to toggles. For example, you can do FN F3 to lessen the brightness of your screen, and FN F4 to increase its brightness. Just use it like a control key. Hold down the FN key and hit the relevant key to activate the function. I have used this to turn my screen right off because, of course, most of the time, I'm not going to need it. When sighted people need to see what I'm doing, I can then increase the brightness with the FNF4 key. There are also toggles to turn off your Wi-Fi, which I believe is FNF2. So if you want to save some power, you can toggle that off when you're not using it. Some of the others as well. I won't go through with all those functions here. Whatever you do, though, do not, under any circumstances, hit FNF7. That is the mute all sound key. And the only, it won't reverse itself. These aren't, it isn't like a toggle. And that's same with the FNF3 key. When you're turning off your screen, you don't have to worry about hitting it one too many times and having it cycle to full bright again, right? So it's same with this mute button. Unfortunately, it just mutes and there's no unmute. So to get it unmuted again, you have to, by memory, go to Programs, Accessories, Entertainment, Volume, then tab twice, and that should put you on the unmute or mute all checkbox, which then you hit space and it unchecks and unmutes. Right, so if you fall into that pit, that is how you dig yourself out without sighted assistance. That was the one thing that got me a couple of times before I really knew what was happening and how to reverse it. Now, the keyboard, other than that, is essentially a regular, if shrunk, keyboard. So just be aware, it will take you some time to get used to that fact, the smallness of the keyboard. It's not as uncomfortable as you'd think. Trust me on this, it really isn't. Once you get going, it really starts to feel quite natural after a while. It's just big enough for that to happen. If they made them any smaller, I'd find it just eternally cramped. But the size that they've found is, I think, the most portable that you can get without starting to get unusable over longer periods of time. I used the computer all day yesterday into the evening to write a review for hopefully Access World or one of these other places I can get it posted. I used it for a full day, pretty much solid, to get this review done, and easily 8 hours anyway. And I felt no finger fatigue or anything. It was just fine. So, you know, that should tell you something. They've thought this through. Found the smallest point where you can go that is still comfortable to use. Now, you shouldn't expect these things to be quite like, it's not going to be as comfortable as a desktop. It's not going to quite be as responsive as a desktop. I've got a desktop here that's about a year old. It's maybe a little more than that, close to 2 years old. It's not top of the line or anything like that. And it's still somewhat quicker. It's somewhat faster booting. It will take about 40 seconds to boot, roughly. Loading everything into place and everything like that. With especially, I'm including JAWS and Skype and AVG version 8 in this time boot time, since these are things that boot up with the system. So you have two system tray utilities of special note. In the system tray, you have the EPC Super Hybrid Engine. This is the most important one because it lets you control your power setting versus performance. So you can have it in super performance mode, which overclocks it slightly. You can have, and that makes everything fully powered. You can have it in high performance mode, which somewhat is normal, I'd say, like what you'd normally run in, I guess. Power saving mode sort of restricts everything, makes sure that the power saving features activate, runs it slower. It slows the processor to, I believe, either 1.2 or 800, one of those two. So it slows you down, and it does save you power. So for basic tasks, word processing, that kind of thing, probably listening to music, you'd be fine with the power saving mode if you were on a trip or something like that. And the only thing that would really, like if you're running sappy voices, I noticed a somewhat break up, so I wouldn't recommend using sappy voices in the power saving mode, especially with the 1 gig. With 2 gigs, I wouldn't be surprised if it worked fine, but with the 1 gig that it ships with, you're in for a choppy ride if you try to do that. JAWS works absolutely fine. NVDA with the eSpeak voice seemed to work fine as well. But anything more intensive than that, you could run into some chop. Now, so that's the power saving mode. You go into the system tray and you right-click on it, brings up a menu, go down and check the option you want, and it'll set itself. And then just start in that power setting. So it's very easy to control that, which I'm very grateful for. There's another utility, the EPC tray utility, that lets you do a couple of important things. It lets you enable and disable your Wi-Fi and your webcam, and it'll either check or uncheck in the system tray. Like, there'll be an option that will toggle, right? So you can go back and check and see that, okay, this is disabled or this is enabled. So that is pretty useful. It also lets you adjust your LCD resolution settings should you need to do this for sighted people, for whatever reason. Now, that's the main features of the unit. The internals, though, I'll go over briefly in performance. The audio is very, very good. The speakers are absolute crap. The external speakers are just a joke. They're horrible. They're good if you just need to hear speech and get something quick done, but listening to music or playing accessible games or movie listening, you're up a creek without a paddle. It's just shameful. Now, where they make up for this is internally. When I got my much more expensive laptop a number of years ago, I paid, it was a 40-gigger hard drive, and I got, it came built with 12 channels of sound with their Kinexant audio. You had 12 free channels, and that was it. Sound was an afterthought, and unfortunately that seems to be true. Laptop sound in general really is. This netbook, I get 34 channels, I believe, if not 35, in total. So I went into Winamp and I checked in the configuration of the DirectX plugin that's for output. You can check your device and see what it uses and what it thinks of the device, and it will say, you know, you have this much free channels, does this capable of this and that range, and you know, it's capable of, it's got 33 channels free. I'm assuming JAWS takes one. And so for gaming purposes, it's quite good. Like, I see no reason why you'd need to get an external sound card, like one of those Creative ZenMod external USB sound boosting capability things. It's quite good on its own. You don't need it like I did with my other laptop. I had to get one of those Sound Odyssey 2 ZS cards. But with this one, just the way it is, sound-wise, it's great. I had no issues whatsoever with lockups or anything like that. Things have just happened nicely, like they ought to, even while gaming. And I did Super Deke Out. I've done Alien Outback. Both run without a hitch. So on that front, it's a real winner. The Intel Atom is a good little processor. It does what it needs to, saves power, is a pretty good low-cost alternative. Certainly for blind people, it does what we need. You know, I had no issues running JAWS, no issues running NVDA. It doesn't slow down, really. There's no lag or anything like that. So that's essentially the netbook in a nutshell. Very light, very portable. Very versatile, full-fledged Windows XP computer using Windows XP Home Edition that can just literally go anywhere. It's what laptops really should have always been, as one person remarked in a review that they wrote, and I couldn't agree with that more. It's a super little traveling companion. Students would love it. It's very quiet. You don't hear it even when the fan's going. You can't hear the hard drive. You can feel a vibration, a slight internal soundless rumble, very, very slight vibration at times, not even always, but at times. So when you're shutting down, the hard drive sort of clicks a few times as it slowly shuts down and parks, and you feel that, but is very slight. You have to put your hand on the device to do that. It's not something you can hear shut down. I can easily see you leaving this on accidentally and not realizing it. That's how quiet this thing is. You're not going to make any enemies, you know, when you're doing something on this device. The keyboard is quiet, too, when you're typing on it. Very quiet keyboard. You could type without fear of waking someone up, really. Very nice, good responsive keyboard on the thing. A little small, but that's the only beef, right? So maybe I would have been happy with a 10-inch keyboard, but having, you know, the 9-inch is really quite usable and just different enough from the desktop keyboard that I'm finding what's happening is you develop different habits for it and it's just becoming unconscious. Like, I don't even think that the keys are closer together, really. I just, my hands just know it now and they just do what they need to do. So, you know, don't be afraid of going 8.9-inch. They are somewhat, you know, a little cheaper and they do the, you know, what you need. And if you need to, you can always connect an external keyboard to it, right? For if you need long-term typing, or for students, for example, in class, they can type on the keyboard of the unit. And when they get back home to the dorm, they can plug in USB keyboard, USB speakers very easily, and whatever else they might want, a flash drive or if you were in a musician or some such thing, you might want to go for external sound of some sort. If you really needed more than 34 channels, which is possible. So essentially what you have is a really versatile companion for work, for play. You play games, can handle any accessible game you might care to throw at it, as of now anyway. It's a real success story in my case. I'm quite happy with this purchase. It worked out very, very nicely. The only thing is the 4-cell versus the 6-cell battery. That's probably upgradable. I haven't looked into that yet, but if should I need even longer battery life, I can do that. Other than that, I got an N Wi-Fi adapter that hasn't arrived yet. It should give me a much faster new N standard of Wi-Fi that didn't come built in. Bluetooth isn't built in either. I haven't tried anything with Bluetooth anyway. I can't say I miss it. I prefer to have things that are wired just in terms of saving power. Batteries, I'd rather have just the one battery and not having to worry about keeping other devices up to date or whatever. So that's essentially where I am. A lot of people talk about this cloud computing. I don't see the need for it. You can have something truly portable, truly small enough that has 160 gigs of storage. You don't need cloud computing. You can have everything running on a portable device that you can take anywhere. It's really fantastic and a really good investment, and I couldn't recommend it enough. Now that's the laptop, the netbook rather, which is my replacement laptop. Now I'm going to come to the rest of my travel gear. I have a 400 gig external drive that I got that I can move things to and from, back up things to, transfer things from my desktop to the netbook. I don't see much need in reviewing that. It's just a simple drive. It's there. I can use it. You can get an external drive. You can get an external flash drive, which I also have. I've got an 8 gig one of those. Seems to be plenty for me. Now, with the rest of my travel gear, I have a collapsible table. It's a PC table tote, it's called. I got it from one of these... I can't remember the store now. It's been so long since I've had to get one of these. It has collapsible legs. They're telescoping. So you pull them out and twist to lock at the height that you want once you've found it. And once you get one leg locked, you lock the others at the height so they're all equal. You don't have a lopsided table. You screw them into the corner sockets in the table. The legs are stored inside the table, so you pull the table, you slide off the bottom of the table, and it's sort of like a cover. It just slides off. You then take out the legs, get them to size, lock them in place with the right turns to screw them, and then screw them into the table itself. Once you have all the four legs, I tend to do one leg, compare each leg to them, get it set at the right length, and then screw that extra, that leg I just finished doing into the table until all four legs are done in the table. You don't even have to expand the table. It can expand out to a fairly good length, and that was useful when I had the full-sized laptop. But now that I have the netbook, you can use the table at its shortest length and still have room for your external USB-powered speakers. And it's a lot more stable that way if you don't expand it. If you need more left-to-right spacing, you can, of course. But as it is, you have plenty of room, and they're not going to fall off. They're not going to be bumped and fall off. It's a really good setup, and I couldn't be happier with that. There might very well be different laptop stands that are better suited. I don't know. I haven't looked at that for, about 3 or 4 years now, at least. But such as it is, that is my table, and I can put it easily in my shuttle, which is the big bag that I got. That I'll start by going over that next. It is essentially a combination suitcase backpack, and it has it's from a place called Mountain Equipment Co-op, www.mec.ca, M as in Mike. It is a sort of a retail thing that really tries to be a responsible business and fair trade and all that. It makes some really excellent gear, and it provides that at reasonable prices. I got this combination suitcase backpack for something like $30 or $40, roughly. And I got a smaller bag from them just for my unit. Actually, because I'm a member, I think I got the big bag for $24 and the smaller bag for $19, around that much. Probably a little less, actually. I assume they reduced that price, too. The shuttle bag, this is the bigger bag that I'm using as my luggage thing, it's big enough so that I can, it's a backpack suitcase. It has a shoulder strap that you can clip on. It also has a backpack straps that come out of the back of it and a little zip compartment that they can sort of hide away in there if you don't use them. But if you do, like me, you can pull them out, clip them into the little rings in that pull out of the bottom of the bag, and then you have adjustable backpack straps. I much prefer to have things on my back, as it just helps me navigate better, keep a good sense of straight direction if weight is evenly balanced on my back versus over my shoulder. So I tend to use it in that form. It also has a handle, so if you need to, you can just snatch it up. When you're, say, getting off a bus and you don't have time to get it on your back again, you just snatch it up and go. So that is essentially the bag. It's big enough so that I can put full change of clothes, pajamas, and all my gear, my computer, my headphones, my speakers, and the table, everything in, and have still some room to spare. But still, it's quite small. It fits easily on my back, and it fits nicely into the trunk of a car or whatever. You can just stash it out of the way in a corner somewhere. It's not a big hulking backpack of any description. And that's the bag. It's got zipper compartments for a mesh one that you can sort of put clothes in, and then the main section at the front, and then another section. It's very kind of nicely divided into compartments that make sense. And after you do that, my smaller bag that I can, if I just need to take my laptop somewhere, I can take the in what's a mech small carry-all. Their small carry-all bag, and it really is. It has enough room for the netbook in its protective sleeve. They sell these netbooks with two cases. One of them is a kind of a felt thing with a leather embossed front. It probably looks better than the other one, but it's I just find it less suitable. I much prefer the zipped sleeve that you can get. It's you don't have room for anything else but the netbook. That includes the power brick. You really wouldn't want to put that in with the netbook, or you'd risk scratching the finish of it. You put the netbook in the sleeve, put the sleeve in the small carry-all, and you also have room in that carry-all for a set of traveling headphones in their protective case, and a set of speakers in their protective case. And it's still quite a light load. You just sling that over your shoulder if you have to. It's not enough to really unbalance you, really, or anything like that, like the big laptop was. It's a nice, light way of carrying around all you need to quickly set up shop anywhere. and get work done. It's a really nice portable system. And with those carrying bags, it's just a snap. You don't have room for the table. You'd have to carry that in your luggage or separately if you're heading somewhere where you thought you'd need it. But other than that, everything is right there. So most times when you're going somewhere where you are going to have a flat work surface available to you, chances are, you can just take the small carry-all with the bag, speakers, everything you're going to need, all in one bag, and the power brick, which is quite small, by the way. It's a small little power brick with a two-prong plug. So that's nice and handy and very versatile. So that, in essence, is my travel gear. And then, of course, there's a Trekker Breeze. Someone else has already done a review of that. I don't see any reason to go into much detail here. And other than the Breeze, I got all this for, I would say, roughly $500-ish dollars if you added everything up, including shipping. The two bags were like 24 and 19, so that wasn't much. The Wi-Fi adapter and the one RAM upgrade maybe totaled $60 or so. The netbook itself was, including shipping and everything else, something like 450, possibly a little less. So around 500, maybe at tops 550, but probably a lot less than that. So, it's a big expense, for someone in my position, but I think it's a worthwhile one because it just makes me a lot more mobile and a lot more ready to just tackle things as they come up in life. So that's, there you have it. I hope that has been helpful or at least enjoyable to you. I will, of course, be back when circumstances warrant that. I tend to wait until such time as a new technical development catches my interest. And anyway, if you want to catch hold of me, the best probably way is email. I sometimes drop into online chats and stuff, but it's kind of irregular. So email is really the way to get access to me. I tend to check that wherever I am. It is michael.fair@gmail.com. So michael.fair@gmail, G as in go, mail, all one word, .com. And look forward to hearing from some of you. And till next time, keep well and keep those great Blind Cool Tech podcasts coming. I certainly enjoy snarfing them down.